This podcast is brought to you by Most Valuable Podcasts, leading the league in podcasting entertainment.
Welcome in, my friends, to another episode of Behind the Pen. My name is Mike Rankin, and I will be your host today, and I am joined by Brandon Swanson. Thanks, man, for hopping out behind the pen.
Hey, thanks for letting me in.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be our first show together, and I wanted you to come on this week specifically because I'm focused on a lot of baseball. And baseball, yeah, it's my favorite sport, and I want to kind of take all the baseball content and jumble it in. Now it's June 30th, so we got a lot to get into. But before that, I want to plug our Patreon page because that's very important to us. Patreon.com/Most Valuable Podcast. Become a Patreon. You know, donate a couple bucks a month. And it helps us provide better content for you by allowing us to do different things like you saw on YouTube. We're implementing video now. So whatever you can donate, thank you very much if you do so otherwise.
And if you don't, you're dead to us, but that's fine.
I didn't say it, so, but honestly, there's some truth to that. So, hey, if you can't we get it. You know, it's okay. But check us out on YouTube at Most Valuable Podcast and subscribe to our channel. We're picking up some steam, Brandon. I don't know if you've been checking it out.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah, we appreciate all of you who are listening and commenting and being a part of this. And I just want to throw this out there, too. You know, behind the pen, thank you all for listening. If you want to throw in some comments down below, let us know what we should talk about next week for some, if you want some baseball talk, want us to talk about your teams, let us know. We'll do it.
Absolutely. And also, if you want to just support Mike Rankin personally, he's always standing out on the corner of 111th and Cicero. So mm-hmm. that's usually the spot he's working. What time are you usually working out there,
well,
Mike?
Well, I really have no other life than that, so I'll be there all day, every day, 24/7.
Okay, do you have one of those like made-up signs where it's just on a piece of paper, or do you go get it laminated at Kinko's?
I'm going to be honest, it's actually quite pathetic. I'm just standing there waving at people.
Oh, okay.
And sometimes like I'll just stand there, and they're asking me, hey, man, you know, I've seen you a couple days in a row now. You haven't left. And I'm like, well,
nowhere to go.
So
nowhere to go.
That's where we're at right now. But all right, Brandon, what do we got today? We got baseball, obviously. We're going to end the show with some Bears talk, but right now we're going to bring up some baseball news that went down today before the trade deadline. It involved a couple playoff teams who are trying to work their way there to that point. The Miami Marlins doing some stuff. You know, they consider themselves a playoffs team, and I can't argue with their thinking there because they're going out and getting the best reliever in baseball right now in Fernando Rodney.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Rodney to Miami, and you said the best reliever in baseball right now. You're not kidding. 28 appearances for a Padres team that was going backwards, and he's got a .31 ERA. He's allowed one run. That one run just recently, I think in a game this past week, I mean, Fernando Rodney, he's a guy that for the Marlins, I mean, for anybody, but definitely for the Marlins now, you don't have to worry about that back end of the rotation. That back end of the bullpen. He is going to be a guy that comes and he locks it down.
Absolutely. And he's a great complement to AJ Ramos. Now, I'm not sure if Ramos, because Ramos has been the guy in the ninth and he's been locking down as their closer for the Marlins. Rodney comes in and is an eighth inning guy. Separately, I think Marlins have some flexibility there. And this goes, we mentioned Rodney, this goes back to his time with the Cubs last season. And last season, I'm not sure how many appearances, 17 appearances or something like that. He had a .81 ERA. And he was just, his dominance after being traded to the Cubs is just taken off from there. And like we mentioned, he's still got the devastating fastball, the mid to upper 90s fastball. Devastating slider, strikeout pitcher, power pitcher, averaging about a strikeout per appearance. So good for the Marlins. They have a lot of young talent. I'm excited for this team.
Yeah, they really do. And, you know, you add Rodney, guy 39 years old.
Still got
39
it.
39 years old. He still got it. And he still has the crooked hat on his head. You know, that also never changes. But that's huge for this Marlins team. And if any team that's considering themselves as being a playoff team, what are you going to have to do? Pitching. And everybody talks about, okay, you can have hitting. You can have the starting rotation. It's all about the bullpen. It really does come to the
bullpen.
Look
at the Royals last two seasons.
Absolutely. That's how Kansas City got to the World Series and then certainly won the World Series over the Mets last year. Rodney being placed into that Miami bullpen, the back of it, that's going to be huge. And when you're not scratching your head on who's going to be coming in 7th, 8th, 9th area, you're a team that's pretty safe and you're a team that can be feeling pretty good about themselves, especially in a close one-run, two-run ball game.
You know, the Cubs just got done playing the Miami Marlins in a four-game series, and Chris Bryant, who is arguably one of their best hitters, he said that the Marlins bullpen is the toughest they've seen all season. You mentioned the importance of pitching, and let me mention the starting pitchers as we wrap up this Marlins topic real quick. Jose Fernandez. This guy is coming off, I believe it was Tommy John surgery, or it was some kind of injury to his arm. It was devastating. He missed a lot of time, and they're kind of restricting him in terms of his innings. Fernandez is dominant. He's been better than Kershaw in specific categories, and it's been an extremely impressive performance to this point with the Marlins rotation. Tommy Kohler, he's still young. He's gotten roughed up a little bit, but Adam Conley and Wei-Yin Chen, they signed Chen to that deal prior to this season. So, look, the NL East is up for grabs in terms of the wild card because I don't really suspect a second wild card team out of the NL West. So that leaves the Cardinals, maybe the Pirates, and the Marlins and the Mets gunning for that final wild card spot. And, you know, with the Nationals, I think the Nationals are at the top of the East, and then underneath them, fight for a spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we certainly know that Atlanta's not going to get it, and we know that Philadelphia's not going to get it from the East, but I think that the Mets, they're a team that's always a team to watch, especially around trade deadline time. I mean, you know, we talked before we came on the podcast here today is that all the Mets needed last year was to sign Jonas Cespedes.
Right.
Cespedes wasn't the only deal. It was everything else that then came from within their organization. They had a lot of things happen. Guys got healthy and they got hitting again. But, you know, who's going to be that team again this year? Will it be the Mets again? Possibly Miami. I mean, Miami's really trying to position themselves mm-hmm. right now. You know, since we're talking about them, they're trying to do it. Pittsburgh, you know, watching them play against on Sunday Night Baseball, play against the Dodgers in a game where, you know, maybe Clayton Kershaw wasn't 100% healthy because he was pitching, and a couple of days later, he's on the DL. He's on
right.
the DL right now. That's a huge loss for the Dodgers, and they've got already multiple starting pitchers on the disabled list. But could it be Pittsburgh? I mean, St. Louis is never going away. St. Louis is never going away in the NL Central. It's just, you know, mm-hmm. we could talk about just who could be making it as a wild card team, or who's going to end up winning the divisions. I mean, people would say it's going to be the Cubs in the NL Central. They wouldn't be wrong, I don't
right.
think. But we could talk about
right.
just
no,
this
we can go
for
on
hours
and
because
and
it's
on.
So exciting. Because
yes.
who's going to be that second half team? Because do you want to start off really, really strong? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But who is it that finishes strong? So cliche, but really, who is going to be the team that has the better second half? Because if you just had mediocre, even if you went 500 the whole way in the first half,
you're
but
right
you come
in
out strong.
Right in the middle of it.
You know, you come out with a Cubs start
sure.
in the second half.
Hey, White Sox are.
It's
23
you know,
and 10 they started.
Hey.
But we'll get to the White Sox in a minute. But yeah, like I just want to build off what you were saying with this whole playoff situation because two wild card spots opens up all of these other
yeah,
possibilities
does.
For many teams. So that also affects the trade deadline because your fringe teams are like, well, kind of in it. Kind of on the bridge of not being in it, so what do we do here? So it just creates an interesting dynamic there. Moving on, though, you mentioned the Dodgers and their starting pitching. They did lose Kershaw. Not sure how long he's going to be out. I don't know how serious his injury is, but he's on the 15-day DL. They went out and made a trade because, boy, they need to rely on their starting pitching, as you mentioned. And they went out and got Bud Norris from the Atlanta Braves. Now, Bud Norris, is he the guy that they want to build, obviously not build around, but use as a stable piece of the rotation? I mean, he's still got it. He entered, I think he was in the bullpen with the Braves to start the season, comes back in June, and does pretty well as a starter. He's got like a 2-3 ERA as a starter since June something.
Yeah, he's, you know, overall this year, it's not been good, but he's on a team that's not very good. 3-7 with a 4.22 ERA. He is 2-1 with a 2.08 ERA in 6 June appearances.
Oh, there we go.
5 starts.
Very nice.
And you know, this is a Bud Norris who just, you know, a couple of years ago back in 14 went 15-8
mm-hmm.
with the Baltimore Orioles. So last year wasn't too good. He was 3-11 with an ERA close to 7. We'll just forget about that. But he's a pitcher who 2 years removed in 2014, 15-8.
Mm-hmm.
If the Dodgers could get anywhere close to maybe what even a half of that, they're probably doing better for themselves than what they were, because what they are right now is very, very hurt.
Sure. And
so they bring in a guy who's
absolutely
a veteran arm in a rotation that needs, I think, a veteran presence right now with everyone on the
stable DL. Arm who can provide innings. And, you know, I think they made this move because they don't really have faith in their farm system to call a pitcher up. You look at Kenta Maeda and Scott Kazmir. Those guys are you know, kind of stable, but they're not, you know, they're not having a solid season in terms of keeping the Dodgers afloat. I feel like the Dodgers are just a fringe 500 team moving forward. They have a lot of young talent. Corey Seager could emerge as one of the top five shortstops in the NL if he's not there already.
Yeah.
And you look at Jock Peterson as well, Yasiel Puig. We can go in depth in the Dodgers. It's just, this. Does this Bud Norris trade bolster their playoff chances? Meh. I don't really see any decline, or I think it's just a move that keeps them afloat moving forward past the deadline.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I was actually going to use the term, it's going to just keep them afloat.
Well,
it's going to keep them right there. What I think that the Bud Norris deal does, and I think that, you know, Dodger management can come out and say to the public and to the fans, you know, this might be able to move this, or they'll probably drop the word might. This is going to be able to move us forward,
right,
and move a better spot. But let's be honest, behind closed doors in the war room, you know, they're looking at it and they're going, he's going to help keep us stable. And right now, that's what we need until we can get, you know, Brett Anderson back, Brandon McCarthy back, Wood, but, you know, any of these guys, you know, and Kershaw. You know, some of these guys just, we may not see again, but Kershaw's a guy, they get him back, they get him healthy, but it's every fifth day. You know, you need more than every fifth day. If you're winning on every fifth day, that's freaking cool.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of things.
Yep, and I personally believe that the Giants are just too good to get off their throne up there. It's an even year. So those stupid Giants always posing a threat on those even years. So we'll see what happens in the NL West. Like I said, I think the Dodgers are a fringe playoff team. Not sure if they're going to be able to make it. But it's exciting. The trade deadline's at the end of July, as we know, and the All-Star break hasn't even happened yet, but people are moving around, and it's an exciting thing in baseball. That's what you love.
Absolutely is. And you always see, you know, a couple of these before the deadline deals. You know, people, they want to start moving now if they can. And if you find the right team, you can do that.
Sure.
And you kind of start to see where, I don't know, I mean, that obviously, you know, the San Diego Padres, they've been a seller for, now it's 2 years in a row.
Yeah, ever since they went all out that one offseason, it's been a disaster since.
Exactly. But then you have to look, too. I mean, Atlanta, they're going to be a seller as well, but just how much are they going to sell? Are they going to give up Julio Teheran? Are they going to give up anyone along those lines? Are they going to give up Vizcaino in the back end of their bullpen? Who else is how big of a seller are you going to be? Or are you going to make a move where, you know, we'll sell, but we're not going to give up the entire farm for anybody? And, you know, in their case, it wouldn't be the farm. They'd be getting a farm.
Yeah.
But
Absolutely. No, this is the time of year where baseball gets really exciting, the brunt of it, and they're in the focus of the sports world. And right now, speaking of sports world, the Cleveland Indians are dominating, really, the city of Cleveland sports in general. You know, the Indians haven't lost since LeBron and the Cavs won the championship, so Cleveland's bumping right now as sports town, but 12 in a row by Cleveland Indians. How about it?
12 in a row by the Cleveland Indians. I'll tell you what, no one, I don't think, not even Cleveland fans, would have ever seen that coming. They thought they were going to be, they thought
sure.
that God was giving them enough by allowing them to win the NBA championship, you know, to bring that home, to win the finals there, which ended up being a really good finals that I probably really could have cared less about.
There you go.
I think that, you know, the city of Cleveland, now they finally have things going. But this may be so crazy as to go out on a limb and say maybe Johnny Manziel gets clean, but he's no longer.
He said he wanted to get sober.
Yeah,
I don't know if
well,
you heard that.
I'm sure he did back, you know, a couple years ago, too, but it just hasn't worked out
Johnny
yet.
Johnny Manziel, what a disaster.
You almost feel for him.
That's exactly what I said.
And then you look at, you know, Instagram posts from him and stuff like that.
He's like, hi, Dad.
Wow, what a jag off.
Exactly.
So then you're like, I don't feel so bad anymore.
Exactly.
But going back to the Cleveland Indians, these guys are doing it with having, I think, two guys in their lineup that are hitting over 300. And then they're having guys like Tyler Naquin.
Mm-hmm.
Who is Tyler Naquin? And this guy's hitting 331 with six homers and 16 RBIs.
Yep.
I mean, and he's become like an everyday player for them. Where in God's green earth did this
so
guy
come
from?
So what happened with the Indians is this season going in, I was high on the Indians, but I didn't think they could be a division winner. I still thought that the Royals were the division leader and they had to be knocked down, and I picked them. But Kansas City's been inconsistent with their starting pitching and they're hurt. Moustakas, that injury hurts them big time.
Huge.
With the Indians, they lost two outfielders, one before the season start, Adrian Amonte, top talented, young player, center fielder. He's gone for PED use, and then they lose Marlon Byrd because he's out for PED use, and now they give regular playing time to guys like Lonnie Chisenhall, Tyler Naquin, like you mentioned, young prospect who comes up, Rajay Davis. And what I'm getting at is these offseason moves to really, it's not technically a stopgap because, these guys are producing. And you look at a guy in particular, and I'm focusing mainly on the lineup. Everybody knows the rotation's the best in baseball. Mike Napoli. The addition of Mike Napoli to the Cleveland Indians has been so big. And he's been one of the main consistent contributors in their offense. It's just taken this Indians team to a new level, and I personally think it's their division now. Absolutely.
It absolutely is. When you're 47-30 and the next closest team is what, 5-6 games out? Yeah, you're doing pretty well for yourselves. And you talked about Mike Napoli. He's only batting at .239, but he's hit 16 home runs on the power numbers,
yep.
16 homers and 52 RBIs. And the guy, there's just players, when they step up to the plate, they look hitterish. And that's Napoli every time. He always has a chance to hit a home run way out of the ballpark. And I think that just up and down the lineup for the Indians, they're dangerous.
Absolutely.
They're dangerous because, you have, I'm looking at the lineup that they have tonight against the Blue Jays. Leading off, they've got Carlos Santana. Okay,
he's not a prototypical leadoff hitter,
he's
but he
not.
Gets on base big time.
Yeah, he's got 4 stolen bases.
It's very unconventional, but he's producing.
Absolutely. Then you got Jason Kipnis. Now that's a guy, he's hitting pretty well.
Consistent.
He can hit for power. Lindor has been everything
now,
that they've wanted and more.
I could argue that Francisco Lindor is the best shortstop in baseball right now with his skill set. It's got to be in terms of combining defensive capabilities as well as offensive production and your skill set on the bases. I think Lindor does it all. He's better than Andrelton Simmons because Simmons is arguably the best defensively, but you combine the offensive numbers, he's not even close. Same with, and then the closest comp I could say is Manny Machado and Carlos Correa. Those two players are so electric, and I feel like Lindor, and what bothers me if we're on this topic of Francisco Lindor, he's not even in the conversation in the All-Star game. He's not even top 5 in the voting category. I don't understand that. That's an atrocity. But, as you were saying, this lineup is really picking it up, and Michael Brantley's hurt. He's been hurt all season.
And Michael Brantley's hurt. You just said it. He's not even in the lineup. He's not even in the lineup. But you just have guys, Rajay Davis, I'll tell you names that the White Sox never want to see. It's all of them! Rajay Davis for sure. Juan Uribe, he gets hit
Legend.
In the frickin' balls.
He's got it.
He's still gonna hit home runs against you. This is a very, very good lineup right now for Cleveland. And you talk about Francisco Lindor not even being in the conversation as of right now. I think it's because, people are underrating him because of the fact that he's with Cleveland.
Sure.
I really think that's probably number one. And two, it's probably because he's so new. They're like,
second
well, we
year
don't,
in the
we
league.
Don't want anyone new. We don't want anyone that's, we're going to go for Carlos Correa because we've heard his name 5 times. We've only heard Lindor's name 2 times. So we're going to go with the guy we've heard of more. And then it's just Lindor's name has not been all over MLB Network yet. That's what I'm trying, these guys, how do they get famous? You talk about them.
Sure.
You just talk about them. Who's on SportsCenter a lot of the time? I'm hardly ever seen any plays by Francisco Lindor. Hardly ever. Do you want to see a Manny Machado play? You're going to see it. You want to see Andrelton Simmons? I don't even see Andrelton Simmons as much, but
yeah, because the Angels are bleh.
Well, exactly. And Cleveland is... when you talk about Cleveland, just the context that you put it in, it has a bad connotation because it has for so long,
right.
But not anymore. The Indians, if they continue to keep up this streak, which I think they're going to, not saying that necessarily they'll keep up the streak of winning 13 in a row,
right.
But playing well and winning series, absolutely.
Well, they have a chance to tie their franchise record in wins in a row at 13 if they win tonight. And What I really like about this Indians team and what they needed a run like this. Now they can separate themselves because for the most part they were hovering around 500. Oh, are we a good team? Well, are we going to be a fringe playoff team? Whatever it is, they're a good team. And now they're hitting their stride. This like I said, this win streak really catapulted them into the position where they're comfortable. Now they can fix the bullpen. They're going to need some help, especially in the back end. Cody Allen as a closer, kind of, you know, not that lockdown guy you'd like to see
in
the ninth.
He's not.
So he gets knocked around a little bit. You don't really want a pitch-to-contact type of player as a closer, but, you know, you're going to take what you can get there. Brian Shaw, they use him a lot in the eighth, and he's been very bad.
Yes, he has. Quite frankly. For lack of a better term, he's been terrible.
So I see two things with the Indians right now. They need bullpen help, and everybody needs bullpen help. It's just a fact of life in baseball. But they need another bat. And a lot of people are putting Jay Bruce in that category as a guy that the Indians can go after. And he's on a lot of different teams' radar. He's even on the White Sox, which we're going to touch on soon. But going back to it, they're going to get enough production from what they have right now, and that starting rotation is so good that they're going to be able to carry them for the rest of the season as long as they're healthy.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And when you look at a team like the Cleveland Indians, and you go, oh my gosh, how have they been able to get on a streak like this, and how have they been able to keep it up? And they look like a team, they're not ready to be done with this streak. And you can go and you can look and you can go, well, they just played the Atlanta Braves. Well, the Braves are still a Major League Baseball team. You still have to beat them. You know, they still have good players. They still have Freddie Freeman. They still have some good pitching. Some. When I say some, I mean about one or two. But you still have to play well.
Sure.
You have to bring your best game every night. And that's what the Cleveland Indians have done. And you talk about the starting pitching. The starting pitching for Cleveland will carry this team throughout the rest of the season. And you know, why is that? Because these guys have been so dominant. When they lost, was it Carrasco for a number of months, a couple of months? You know, you could see that. They weren't playing their best baseball then because you had a gap. You had a gap in your starting pitching. But now you have Corey Kluber, who I think is only 8-7, but still has pitched well. You've got Carrasco, Salazar, Tomlin, Bauer.
Yeah,
These guys up and down the starting rotation.
You think you can win every night, and they have been. And with Corey Kluber, he's your worst pitcher out of the bunch this year. And that's crazy to say because he was AL Cy Young candidate last year. He's dominating. Carlos Carrasco is fantastic. Danny Salazar, young arm, 27, electric. Josh Tomlin stepped up. He's been huge. Trevor Bauer started in the bullpen, but you knew they wanted to implement him as the starting rotation piece, and he also throws in the mid-90s. Very powerful arm. I really like what the Indians have going for them right now, and I'm looking forward to them because they're my team in the American League, honestly. I like to say I'm a closet Browns fan. But I'm full-blown Indians fan. I want everybody to know that. So, but yeah, go Indians. We're good there. But in the AL Central elsewhere, they have firm control over teams like the White Sox and the Royals, and also the Tigers and Twins are bad. But like I said, with the White Sox, I want to bring up the White Sox because are they a playoff team?
Really, you know, really quickly, just before you bring up the White Sox, I just want to bring up what this team did with the Indians. So what they did on the 17th of June, they beat the White Sox, and then on the 18th they beat the White Sox, and on the 19th they beat the White Sox. And then the 24th through the 26th, they swept the Tigers. You are not only playing well and sweeping teams like the Rays and sweeping teams like the Braves, but you're whooping ass in the division. And that's the thing. That's what so many people talk about. You can win outside of here, and you can win outside of here, but you can't win in your division.
Right.
You're probably not going to win the division.
That's a very important point because the Indians have been dominant in the AL Central this year, and that's going to be a major reason why they ultimately end up winning the division if that does occur. But let's talk about the White Sox because I know you're a White Sox fan.
Yeah.
And I always love having White Sox guys on the show because we're Chicago homers here, and I just want your opinion, man, because, you know, going into this season, we had high hopes. We felt like Rick Hahn made, you know, the right decisions to rebuild to the point where they have a chance to make playoffs. And the White Sox, you're always going for it, which, as a result, you deplete your farm system, put you in a position where you might not be good, you know, for a while if this does end up failing. And right now, I can't tell. Is it failing, Brandon?
I don't think it's failing. I think that You know, it's the same. It's a lot of the same stuff that people have already heard on a lot of the other networks. You've heard that we knew that bullpen wasn't going to be able to last the entire season. Well, you know, here's the thing, is that we should have probably looked a little deeper at the bullpen to make sure we got guys who could help make it last, or we should have. You know, the White Sox are very, very big. I really love the White Sox, but anyone who loves any team, they're going to absolutely get pissed and throw temper tantrums with their team sometime, which I do. And I'm not afraid to say that because that's a true fan. If I didn't care, then sure. I wouldn't be a true fan. But they're big stopgap guys. You know, let's get Matt Latos.
He's gone.
Matt Latos is not the answer as a starting pitcher. Miguel Gonzalez, we're working with him, but he's either really sharp or bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
James Shields, finally, maybe James Shields is coming back into form of a consistent, going to give you about 6-7 innings.
You better hope.
And I'm going to give up, you know, about
four
runs. You know, if four runs is his max instead of his starting point,
sure,
that'd be okay. You know, really, I didn't mind the James Shields trade, but when those first couple of starts, it's like they were just, oh, T-ball. All right, yeah, Johnny, we're putting the tee up. It's your turn. Boom!
Yep.
Boom!
It was just over and over again. I was actually at James Shields' first start as a White Sox, and Stephen Drew hit a home run off of him. So he was putting up softballs. Man, that with that trade, though, I'm with you. I don't mind it because they didn't really give up anything. 17-year-old Fernando Tatis Jr. and Eric Johnson, who sucks.
And Eric Johnson, who has been just as bad as Shields for the Padres as Shields has
been
for us.
The thing with the Shields trade is his contract.
The money.
He's got an opt-out after this year, but he's not going to take a player option. He's going to stay, and he's got 2 years after this, and he's going to make some dough.
Yeah.
And that's going to, you know, it doesn't really restrict the White Sox, only because we've talked about this before. This free agency period is going to be brutal. So, I mean, right now, that was kind of their free agent signing in James Shields, you know, if you want to look at it in a certain perspective. But with the White Sox, I look at them, and you're right. The rotation's a question. Only consistent guys are Chris Sale and Jose Quintana. Jose Quintana hasn't gotten a win in his last, like, 9 starts. He's not getting any support, and that's been the story of his career. So Carlos Rodon is hit or miss. He's still lacking the location with his fastball. I think they're going to be a fringe team all season. And I think very soon, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, they need to make a decision. Are we going to blow this team up and rebuild similar to the way the Cubs did it? I know you can't technically do that anymore because of what baseball's trying to restrict that from happening, teams tanking, because you see it in the National League. But with the White Sox, I think that 2 or 3 years, we're going to have a very good picture of either they're right there or they just got to start over.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for the White Sox right now, after a win against Minnesota, that winning that rubber match against the Twins, which they did as we're, you know, we're recording this. You guys will hear and you'll be like, I didn't play Minnesota today, idiots. But they did today as we're doing this. But they're 40-39. As of right now doing this, they are 40-39. And I think that as of right, you go for it. You know, you go for it this year at this point. You go for it because of all the moves you've already made. Mm-hmm. You aren't turning back to go, oh, well.
And what did you say?
It didn't work.
There are 40 moves made?
40 moves.
To
40
this point?
Moves made already to this point. We had 40 moves made all of last season, all of 2015. The White Sox made 40 moves. We've made 40 at this point on June 30th, 2016.
It's like they were patchworking their roster come off-season time, and then 2 months into the season, they're doing it again. You know, you sign Rollins, and now here's a guy that probably taught Tim Anderson a lot about being a major league player, which was valuable.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have Tyler Saladino as well. A guy that in the offseason I think they totally missed on was Ian Desmond. You look at Ian Desmond killing it for the Rangers right now, and he could play an outfield position. He would be better than Avi out there. He could even DH for you.
Most people are better than Avi.
I wanted to bring him up because I wanted to see what your opinion was on this specific player. Do you think Avi is going to turn out to be anything? Because we've been asking this question for a while now.
Right now, Avi's looking like he's going to turn out to be what he is right now. You know, that's mediocre.
Right.
That's he's a guy.
Bad outfielder.
He's not good. He's not a good outfielder, not at all. And at the plate, he's either got his plate discipline on or not. You know, it's like a It's like a thing in MLB, the show. You either got the slider way up or it's off. You know, and that's what he's been. And he's not a guy who, you know, a veteran does a good job of being able to go through in his at-bat. He's able to kind of switch things up in his at-bat, make the adjustment in the at-bat. Avi can't do that. He has not shown that to this point. He has to strike out 10 times
right.
in a series and then go sit down, talk to himself, talk to some other guys, and then, you know, a couple series later, he's finally hitting the ball, getting some big hits. I'll tell you what, he's had some big hits. I remember a game against the Tigers this year. He had a huge hit to, I think, tie the ball game against K-Rod and screw everyone on the Tigers. I like them, but I hate them. And, you know, the White Sox ended up winning that game against Detroit, I think, in 14 innings. That was the game that...
Oh, was that James Shields start? And they came back from, or was this earlier in the season?
It was... Shoot, when...
Were they at home? Because I do remember a game against the Tigers.
We were at home... I don't think it was a Shield start. Anyways, I can't remember, but we ended up winning that game, and Avi was the reason that we tied it.
I think I do remember that game. I think Shields gave up 7. They were down 7-1. They came back to tie it.
That's it. That's exactly the one. Yes, that's exactly the one. And he is...
Yeah, no,
he's hot and cold.
I know what you mean.
He is hot and cold. He is a terrible defender, so if you're going to use him, you have to use him as a DH, I think. But the White Sox don't want to use him as a DH because I think that... When they got him, they intended to have him be an everyday outfielder.
A decently athletic outfielder who can field his position. You know, when he does make contact, it's a different sound off his bat. And that's what guys who are fans of Avi love about him, because he can really stroke the ball. But the problem with him is he's super inconsistent, like we mentioned. So he can't lay off the slider in the dirt. And when your wins above replacement is taking a giant hit because of your defensive abilities, then you're pretty much invaluable. Okay. Or not valuable. Invaluable is a good thing.
Yeah.
But no, you know what I mean. So with the White Sox, it goes beyond Avi Garcia, because sometimes their offense hits, right? They'll score runs. But then your starting rotation is giving up 5, 8, 9, 10 runs, and your bullpen isn't helping you at all. This bullpen is taxed. They are using them a lot. We saw the downfall of Matt Albers. Jake Petrischka's out for the year, which hurts a lot.
Putnam could be.
And then Putnam, too. So with this White Sox team, their bullpen is in dire straits. Their offense isn't consistent enough to continue to win games. Look, Todd Frazier, your big acquisition. He's got 5 doubles this year. That's it.
Yeah, I know. And he had, what was it? All of last year he had 43 doubles.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I love the home runs and the power we're getting out of him. Guy's not hitting his weight. I think at the end of the game today, he was at about 204. What I do like...
Not going to cut it.
But for Frazier, the thing that saves him is his defense at third.
Yeah.
I mean, he has really, really good defense at third. He has barely committed any mistakes down there at third base. He is much, much better than I think anyone else that we could put down there on this roster right now. And he is. And that's a guy who I want to be able to hang on to for a while. So you're not hitting great right now, at least for average.
Mm-hmm.
But you're tied, I think, for the most home runs in the American League, if not all
MLB,
of baseball.
Yeah, tied with Trumbull, I believe.
I mean, it's crazy. He's hitting the ball
well. That's the value you get in him. His OPS is at the top of the league, kind of, because, you know, his OBP is going to take a hit. But you know what I'm getting at here? He's able to slug a lot. That's his bread and butter. But 5 doubles. That's,
I know.
They got to fix that with him. He's got to be more productive than just hitting solo home runs all the time.
Absolutely.
His defense is fantastic. But let's talk about some more positive things about the White Sox, what they have going for them. Because Tim Anderson, called him up, doing very well as of late. And, you know, I think he doesn't walk at all. Like, he's very aggressive at the plate. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. He doesn't walk. But he's getting you hits. He's got speed. And Tyler Saladino is another young player who I very much like. I feel like he needs to be in the lineup more, but that's just me. And I think those two guys, you got something there. I think Laurie likes being in Chicago.
I do too.
So I think you got Melky Cabrera has been your best hitter, arguably. So there's some things that the White Sox can really look at as a positive, but I still, at the end of the day, don't believe right now that they're on the level of the Cleveland Indians, even the Rangers. I don't think they can beat them. Boston, I know they swept Boston. They did a really good job in that series, but
and the Rangers, we showed at the beginning of the season when we were on our hot streak, we swept them at home. We don't sweep the Rangers anywhere, any day. You know, it doesn't matter. But then we went to Texas.
Oh, the disaster.
And we started to come down to earth.
Right.
The White Sox, what they have shown me, I don't really worry. They have had some bad stretches. But I do not really worry about their starting lineup. I'm okay with it. People have complained, oh, we don't have a good catcher. Well, we have, we've got Dionne Navarro, and then we've got Avila. Neither of those guys, they don't bother me. They're good catchers behind the plate. They know what they're doing, and they hit okay. That doesn't bother me so much. It's the bullpen. If you go into a game, and you're trying to, you know, you're in a 13-11 ball game or something like that, and you're up 13-11, the bullpen, the way that it's right now, the way that it's set up and the way that it's been used, because our starters, for the most part, aren't good enough to go
leaving them out to dry. Yep.
The bullpen is not going to hold up, and that is the part that worries me. You said it. I've said it on this show already. Everyone's always looking for bullpen help. The White Sox, however, though, didn't realize that they were going to be in this position, sure. I don't think, because I think Rick Hahn was probably getting, you know, someone, Kenny Williams, was probably talking, oh, we're fine, Rick, we'll be fine. Kenny, what are you
it's
still
the White
doing
Sox way,
here?
Man, you know?
But I just, the White Sox need a stronger bullpen. They don't have enough guys to,
yeah.
Matt Perk, thank God he's back in AAA.
You know,
he has not been good. You know what? I'm okay with him. I think he can be good. I saw him in the Boston series. He didn't look terrible.
Right.
But then Nate Jones, I'm starting to come around on. I used to just hate his guts, but I've really started to come around on Nate Jones. David Robertson, today he threw the best I think I've ever thrown him. And when he's got his curveball working, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
If not, we're going to see that Royals series where they came back and we were down 7-1.
Yikes.
Oh, up 7-1. But overall, the hitting for me, that'll come and go. It does for every team.
Yeah, the pitching.
But it's the
they
bullpen, and it's that back of that rotation. Yeah. Sale's great. Quintana's getting no help. Rodon is finally starting to get a little consistent, not talking to as many people. It is the pitching for the Chicago White Sox. That will be the downfall, and that's what the White Sox really need to zero in on.
Absolutely. And I think ultimately the White Sox are where they should be projected to be right now, just around a 500 team. They were not as good as they were when they went 23-10, and they were not as bad as they were when they were 7-23. So I think they're right in that middle area, and in the end, they don't make the playoffs. That's me. That's what I see right now. So, Brendan, thank you for talking White Sox with me. I really appreciated that segment, because when the Cubs are doing really well and the White Sox are fringe average, makes me happy. Makes this Cubs fan happy.
Yeah, I want to end with one thing. Well, first I want to say, you know, I used to really not or think I didn't like the Cubs. You know, but I've started to come to appreciate the Cubs a little bit more in the last couple of years. Just as you know, all the history. A lot of my friends are Cubs fans. And you know, I've gone to a number of Cubs games. My grandma, you know, got you know, rest her soul. She was a huge Cubs fan. Loved the Cubs. You know, for millions of years.
Sure.
And as long as the Cubs have been losing, and sorry, I had to throw that in there. But you know, I've come to appreciate them. You know, I'm never going to root for them when it comes to a White Sox Cubs. But I've come away from, oh, I hate the Cubs, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I've come to really despise more of the Cub fans, certain ones.
Kind of obnoxious, a little bit.
I've seen plenty of obnoxious Sox fans. But that's what I wanted to say about the Cubs. But the other thing is that you and I were talking about it offline before we came on the podcast, and you had asked me if I was a fire Robin Ventura guy or keep Robin Ventura guy. And I said to you, I just don't think that at the end of the day, Robin Ventura is the problem. You know, is he bringing added value to the Chicago White Sox? Probably not. Maybe he is, and we're not seeing it, like he's doing it in the clubhouse. But at the end of the day, is the White Sox clubhouse a disaster? No, it's not. People are happy. Guys are happy. They're loose. They're having fun. Just can't win. But I think Robin Ventura, should his job be on the line? Yeah, in a sense, he should be like, Robin, let's go. You gotta get going. You got to move this team along a little bit better.
If I was a betting man, which I might be, I think he would get fired by the end of, at least before the end of the season. I think his time is just about done, especially with the way the White Sox have performed under him and with all these expectations. And you mentioned it, how much value does it bring to a team? I think as a manager, you're responsible for creating a philosophy in the clubhouse that players can look at and use as motivation to play better. And I think the problem with Ventura is really he's a player's coach. He just doesn't make the right bullpen. He doesn't know how to manage bullpen, and I feel like I'm scratching my head more often than not when he puts together a lineup card. So I think those are tangible things you can replace in a guy like Rick Renteria, who will ultimately almost assuredly be his replacement if Ventura is fired. Which I think he will be, but
yeah.
But you look at
a guy like, and it's tough too because of how good he is. You look at a guy like Joe Maddon, and I think almost for all managers, you get a manager, and it's like, okay, they're a manager. You know, these guys are, grown men and stuff like that. They know who pretty much know how to play the game. So you're almost all on an even level. But then it's what's the added value? What's the added value that manager brings? What kind of baseball knowledge do they know?
Mm-hmm.
Probably they all know something, but which one knows more? Which one knows less? Which one knows more about this one or this one? And Joe Maddon, he brings so much added value to the organization and to the Cubs. I mean, he has pitchers playing the outfield.
Right.
Not too many guys have balls to have pitchers play the outfield. This guy's creative.
Absolutely.
He's crazy. He's actually a little bit of crazy in him. Makes him so good.
Being able to manage personalities and understand what you have in the talent that is on your roster and how you can manage them is just being a manager. And Joe Maddon's got it down to a T, and that he's a big reason why the Cubs are so successful. But, man, that was some good baseball talk. You know, we left out the Rangers, and I wanted to get on the Rangers today, but that's okay because we're running out a little bit of time here. But
well, how about this? The Rangers are pretty good. However, I don't think are going to be good enough at the end of the day to win it all. I don't see the Rangers winning a World Series.
Colby Lewis, Derek Holland, they're hurt. Yu Darvish has been hurt, so they're running out guys out there that I just don't like at all.
And they give up a lot of runs.
They're arguably the best team in the American League. I mean, they're up there with Boston, Baltimore, and you know the Indians too are part of that conversation. But I really do like the Texas Rangers. I think they come out of the AL West, but we'll just put that on hold maybe for next week. We got a lot of baseball stuff to get to next week, and you know the All-Star game's coming up, so that's always a conversation, how much it means to the World Series and all that, because it's supposed to be taken seriously now.
It's not.
I'll probably touch on that next week because that's a very, very interesting topic, but we're going to end our baseball conversation and to move on. With our final segment is going to be some Bears talk because I'm lacking the Bears talk. I missed it last week, but Brandon, this is your first time I'm behind the pen, and I like to touch on the Bears on almost every show. And your new face, new voice here. I want to get your opinion on the Chicago Bears and what you think they're going to do or be competitive level going into next season.
Well, I think everyone has to be disappointed with what the Bears did last season. You know, they were not good, but I think that They showed some signs and glimmer of hope at different spots. You know, you get rid of Matt Forte, you're gonna have, you know, Jeremy Langford and stuff like that toeing the ball for you. But you know, we're gonna see how it all works out. Jake Cutler needs to really finally morph into this consistent quarterback. And you can be consistently bad, but I think I'd like to see him consistently good out there and really in the sense of almost be like a Peyton Manning-esque. Like, you know where to put the football. At what time? You know where to go with it. You know not to, okay, I'm throwing it away. Jake, you just threw it down the middle of the field.
Right.
It just got intercepted. You weren't throwing
Somebody
it away.
Somebody asked you this. Are you a Jay Cutler fan?
I don't mind him.
You don't mind him
because guess what? We could have a lot of other guys who aren't good.
Yeah. See, my opinion on Cutler, and it's well known on this show, that I'm a big believer that he could take the Bears to a Super Bowl, and I think he's good enough to be top 15, top 12 quarterback in the league. And I will continue to say that.
He's certainly good enough to be top 15. I don't know why he couldn't be. The only reason why he couldn't be is mental.
There's
a lot
of variables going into that. We're not going to touch on this Cutler subject.
We won't, but I just want to say really quickly, Jay Cutler, it's all mental for him.
Sure.
It's mental for
him.
We
saw him seeing ghosts.
He's got the skills.
Yeah.
He's got the skills. We saw it in Denver. But
no doubt.
I think that for a quick answer, I think that we're going to see the Bears I'd like to say second. They end up second in the division behind the Green Bay Packers, and Ricky's Vikings can suck at that one. That was just an accident last year. We all know it. But I think John Fox is going to have these Bears second in the division for sure.
You know what? I like that answer because it brings even more optimism to my opinion, because with the Chicago Bears going into this year, last year they weren't even supposed to be even close to being good, right? Because their front seven, they lacked talent.
Yeah, they did.
They didn't have any linebackers, and we went over this before. But this year, you pick up guys like Trevathan Freeman, you draft Leonard Floyd. It's very, very exciting. Willie Young, Lamar Houston on the outside, and then their interior bolster too in the draft and free agency, Akeem Hicks. Oh my goodness. Like, this is, we actually have talent on the defensive side of the ball. So now it's like, okay, those games that you lost by one score or it could have gone either way, that's, it gives you a chance. They were 6-10 last year, and they could have been 9-7 if games went their way. So with the Chicago Bears team, they're loaded offensively now with, in terms of wide receivers, at least for one season. The quarterback position's locked down, and he's in a system finally where he has personnel that he can be comfortable with. This offensive line is being rebuilt, but I feel like it's something, especially the guard center positions. That's, they're building on something there. I just think from now, the optimism now compared to going into 2012 is on a totally different level, right? Because going into 2012, the Trestman era, 2013, 2014, my goodness, like, absolutely wrong hire. You lose Bruce Arians, and then you're in this turmoil for two seasons. We saw the two historically bad defensive teams in the history of, one, the NFL, and especially franchise. Yep. And, oh my gosh, that team colors leading the league's interceptions because they have no run game. It's just a disaster. But now, John Fox, defensive-minded coach, conservative on the field coach, is changing this team to a totally different direction. They look like a pro football team that I can be excited about and optimistic about. That's all.
Yeah, and you know, that's what they are. And you know what I'm happy about is that we're not really focusing so much on the offense as we're focusing on the defense, because the defense got so much better. And I think that, I mean, just improvements all over the defensive side of the football. And that's what John Fox is going to do. You just mentioned he's a defensive-minded guy. That's what he's going to focus on. But that's where the Bears needed to focus on. There are so many holes in that defense and so many reasons why they could have won football games, but that defense wasn't that good. So many times you weren't necessarily looking at the offense.
Yeah.
The defense was not good.
Antrell Roll going up there, bad. And then guys like Bryce Callahan, who was okay, but he's just undrafted free agent, you know, rookie.
Yeah.
It's just, these guys were off the streets. You know, Sherrick McManus, what are you doing out there in the secondary? Like, that can't happen if you're a professional football team. So I think this year, they did a really good job. Ryan Pace, I'm loving what he's doing the first 2 years of his new regime. So I got all the positive thoughts for the Bears right now.
No Adam Gase. He leaves and he's now on the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be helping out Ryan Tannehill. Do you think that affects Jay Cutler in a negative way? Or do you think Cutler is going to be okay and, you know, be able to work well with the new guy that they've got there, who I hear, you know, the relationship is still good.
Right. Thank you for asking that question, because I would love to answer you. With Adam Gase, obviously, you got to remember, Dahl Loggins, who's now the offensive coordinator replacing Gase, they worked together. And this was a foregone conclusion even before last season. They knew Adam Gase was going to get a head coaching job. He's that smart and he deserves it. So what they did was, they really dove into Jay Cutler's skill set and how can we make Jay Cutler the best Jay Cutler he can be. And you saw the improvement. He had one of the best years of his career. Now, I think since the philosophy and the language is very similar, almost identical, but it's different because you can stretch the field with their weapons. I think Jay Cutler is going to feel comfortable in this system. It's really a branch off of Adam Gase, so it's nothing really new. And I think, like you said, the relationship between Loggins and Cutler to this point, it's pretty straightforward. They get along well. I read something that they're both in your face guys. What I mean by that is Dowell will speak his mind, be like, Jay, why the hell did you do that when I told you to do this? And then Jay will be like, well, I saw this. Your play was stupid. This is why I did that. So it's like kind of that just, you know, dialogue going back and forth, which I think is a healthy conversation as long as they're on the same page. I know Cutler had his problems, and he's often referred to as the coach killer. But obviously, he's not a killer of gays. Mike Martz was an idiot. Mike Tice had a basic level playbook. Aaron Cromer is out of his mind. So who really did he have to work with? Now, I'm obviously a Cutler defender, as you can tell. But I still believe that with Gase gone, now with the implementation of Dahl Loggins in his system, I think they're fine. I think you're going to see Cutler's best years ahead.
And I would tend to agree with you, especially with Cutler having someone who's like him. Jay Cutler needs someone, I think, to kind of get in his face and be like, why are you such a dumbass? Like, that's not what you're supposed to do. And Jay's like that. I mean, Jay is like that. He is one who is, he may not be it in the, you know, in the locker room or for a
he doesn't show up to the media
press conference. But
that's not how
that's
he is.
Not where it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be there on the field, exactly. On the sidelines, and that's where you can talk. And just because you're saying stuff like that doesn't mean, wow, he's disrespectful, stuff like that. No, you're in the heat of battle. You know, this is huge. This is a football game where emotions are running high. You want to win. You want to do the best to win. So if you're going to get like that, as long as you have someone else who's going to be right just like that back to you, I think that's a very healthy relationship, and I think that's going to be really good for Jay Cutler, too. I agree with you.
Thank you very much for agreeing with me, and also,
absolutely.
Thank you very much for joining Behind the Pen with me, Brandon. It's been awesome.
Hey, and thanks for letting me come on. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I mean, these 50 minutes flew by. I wish we could talk some more, but we don't want to keep y'all here, you know, all day. I mean, we could if, you know, we could.
If you really like.
Become a patron and follow us on Snapchat and Twitter at Most Valuable Pod. Also, subscribe to us on YouTube, Most Valuable Podcast. Brandon, can you plug your Twitter for me?
Yeah, I sure can. @young_swan19.
Well, do that. Follow him. But most importantly, follow me because I'm more important, obviously.
Absolutely.
@Rankin906. Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe. If, like I said at the beginning of this video, you want us to talk about your team, specifically baseball, let us know in the comment section. We'll hit on some topics, man. We're here to please you. So, for Brandon Swanson, I want to thank you once again for listening to Behind the Pen. I'm Mike Rankin, and we will see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to this MVP podcast. Follow us on Twitter @MostValuablePod for more great podcasts.